Blog Talk Radio.
You broke me down that fire. I'm living life on the merry-go-round.
Well, good afternoon and good evening and hello to all of you folks across the country and around the world. We were going to be playing a song for you by Andre Day, and we will finish this up by the end of the show. But they wanted to do a commercial, and we're not ready for that because it interferes with our timing. And again, hello, this is Grassroots Talks, and this is the show where you folk can begin the process of healing, managing your grief, and we've got none other than the talented, illustrious Dr. Clark, who is going to bring it to you today like she hasn't since we started. So hopefully you folks will be able to call in. If you're not able to listen in on the computer, that yours may be acting a little weird too by dialing 319-527-6090. Dr. Clark, take it away.
Thank you so much. Good evening, everyone. Good to be back. We'll continue our conversation this evening dealing with grief and loss. So I thought tonight that we might focus on various types of losses and then looking at various types of grief. So we talked about previously that loss was being anything that was removed or anything that you were separated from. Another way to look at loss may be a loss occurs when an event is perceived to be negative by individuals involved and it results in long-term changes. And these changes occur in social situations, in relationships, or the way of viewing the world and oneself. And so oftentimes we look at death as being the event that's most in times thought about when we look at loss. But there are many different kinds of loss. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of those and how we may be able to relate to those. So when we look at losses that are deemed to be tangible losses, these losses can be personal, right? So we're looking at your vision, hearing, sexual activity, your mental capacity, infertility, chronic pain, illness, a rape, domestic violence, abuse, or even political torture. And sometimes when we look at this type of loss, we might look at this loss as also being an actual loss, right? Because we can no longer touch or that someone, we can no longer hear them, we can no longer see them. So an example would be, like I talked about, the hearing loss or not being able to use a body part. And this may even include your pet, right? This might be a friend of yours. It might be a life partner, and it can also be your job. And then if we look further, we have those interpersonal losses. So interpersonal meaning that these are the losses that are kind of within. So this would include things like divorce, ending a friendship, or even the death of a loved one. And then as Dr. Brown alluded to in one of our previous shows, that material loss, right? He equated that to losing like $5, right? And so that's something that's a material thing, right? A monetary loss, like losing a job, leaving one's country, wartime trauma, changing residence, becoming homeless. And that material loss can also be known as a necessary loss. Why would we say that a change in employment or losing a job or leaving the country or something would be a necessary loss? It's a necessary loss because it's most oftentimes replaced by something that's different or better. and it's most likely natural or a positive part of life. And so we can equate that to a child going off to college, right? They're leaving their family behind. They're leaving some friends behind, but they're going to something that is a positive experience for them so that they can continue to grow. And then we have symbolic loss. So symbolic losses are things that we relate to, like related to racism or redefining our roles or re-entry or adjustment to a home culture. So that would look like someone that's coming out of an institutional setting and trying to get reintegrated into the culture or into society. And then we have what we have known as intangible psychological losses. And these are those changes that have to do with self-worth, right? How you value yourself or not value yourself due to harassment you may have at work, getting a demotion on your job, changes in sense of control and safety due to crime or terrorism or victimization, or changes in the identity that's related to widowhood, right? That's a whole different way of living, or changes in your worldview related to experiencing like natural disasters or chemical things like that. And so we also have perceived loss. So what do we mean by perceived loss? These are unique losses that the grieving person goes through due to how they perceive the certain situation. So, for example, you have this 4.0 student, right? And they're in this classroom. They've just taken this exam. And say they get A- on the exam because the grading curve was different. In their mind, they perceive that as a loss in one way or another. Or for another example, could be a child that feels more loved by one parent than the other, right? That's a perceived loss. They feel like they have lost love on one end and have a greater love on the other end. So material loss and anticipatory loss. So these are your losses that we can anticipate happening at every stage of our development, right? So that comes across the lifespan. We have, as we mature and we walk into different stages of development, we leave something behind, right? We can anticipate that those changes and things are going to occur in our life. And then, of course, we have those losses that are situations. Those are those unexpected and traumatic life events, like life circumstances, right? One of the greatest examples we have for that right now is dealing with the pandemic, right? This pandemic has created many situational losses for people centered around employment and loss of jobs. And we talked about that in one of our earlier broadcasts. Just like we have situational depression as a result of a specific thing happening, your losses are the same when we're looking at situational losses. So I know that that was a mouthful, and that's a whirlwind way to get our evening started. Dr. Brown, you have anything to add to any of those losses, anything that you feel that I may have left out in that list?
Well, as usual, you were very, very thorough, so missed out. I don't think that you've missed a beat. I think this is very, very valuable information. We can appreciate the tempo in which you shared because you're choosing, obviously, your words very careful and being sensitive to our listening audience who may be going through some of the stuff that you're talking about. Before we continue on, I need to do our commercial, get things a little bit more, as they call it, get your house in order. So we're going to knock out our commercial and come right back, ladies and gentlemen. Our show is being brought to you by Flashback Academy, a nonprofit agency whose primary focus is to assist veterans and former foster care youth in their transition from getting off of the street into vocational training for meaningful jobs and then give them work experience. Find out more about Flashback Academy by writing us at flashbksllc@gmail.com. And we have some exciting news that we're going to share at the bottom of this hour as it relates to the expansion and the continued development and how you can get involved and lend a hand. Dr. Clark, I do have a question for you now. As it relates to the 8 stages, when do you know which one you're supposed to use first?
So we usually refer to them as the 5 stages. Typically, someone will find themselves in the stage of denial. However, remember, there's no chronological order. So someone may even start with acceptance because they have come to a place where they can accept the reality in that moment and for a time, and then all of a sudden they might switch and fall into denial where they start having, you know, those thoughts about this didn't happen. So they don't go into any order. And so that can happen at any time in any manner. You can go back and forth. You can start in acceptance, move to another stage, come back to acceptance. So it's really not a predetermined process.
Can we talk a little bit about denial? In my circle, working with folks who have challenges, that seemed to be the biggest challenge that I have, getting people to accept their role in what's going on. For example, as you know, when we talk about grief, there's a lot of regret associated where they say, you know, if I had been there, if I would have took that last phone call, or if I was at the hospital, things might change, all of that stuff. But on the outside, most people are living with the fact of, well, it was the doctor's fault, or it was the police's fault, or they ate some bad food, whatever the case was that somebody might have passed, or if it's on the job, it's not my fault because, hey, the bus doesn't leave until such and such a time. So I told them I'm going to be 4 minutes late. What's 4 minutes being late on the job? I think you kind of get my point about the denial. Dr. Clark, can you comment on that?
So in regards to what denial looks like in the world of grief and loss, it actually is seen as a protective stage. It's a stage that helps us to survive the loss and to pace our feelings. And so in the denial stage, we may not hear a lot of the coulda, woulda, shoulda, if I did this, if I did that, that we usually see more in our bargaining stage, which we'll talk about more at another time. But sometimes denial comes up and we see it present itself by way of avoidance, right? We just avoid the situation altogether. We might see some procrastination. Procrastinate. That might look like, I know I'm supposed to meet with the mortuary today to start making arrangements, and we wait until the last minute, right? We know that we are supposed to have the program ready to get it over for printing, but I'm procrastinating at that. Forgetting. We oftentimes, when we're in the denial stage, we forget about things that's going on, and we become easily distracted. When we're asked questions and things in the stage of denial, oftentimes you'll hear responses like, I'm okay, or everything is fine, or I'm good, because we've put up that protective factor so that we present to others in a different way. So then feelings that we might experience during this time, there's a shock value, right? The shock of the whole experience that just happened, like what really just happened. there's a numbness sometimes that comes along with denial. There's confusion because we don't really understand. Like, we're a little confused. Like, they were just here this morning. Why is it now that they're not here? So trying to make sense of everything. And then, of course, we know that there's just the whole shutting down process that can happen in denial. So it's not so much that we're blaming at this point, but we have created like this bubble around ourselves to kind of protect us, because we've got to protect our minds, we've got to protect our bodies, we've got to protect our feelings at this point. And so in denial, there's grace, right? And it's nature's way of allowing in only what we can tolerate at that time. No more and no less. And so as time progresses and we're able to let little bits and pieces of reality of the law enter into that space and be able to start verbalizing and asking some of those questions, then we open ourselves up to allowing some of the healing process to start. So that's kind of like a sneaking into what Saturday's conversation is going to be about when we dive more into the stages. But that's what denial kind of looks like in the realm of grief and loss.
Well, I'm trying to make sense out of a text that just came in. The word that I'm going to throw at you is called group grief, if there is a such thing. The person texting on this end is saying, I'm kind of starting to get over it, but a couple of people just won't let it go, and it's starting to drag me right back down the hole. And I haven't heard of this term. Can you elaborate on that, Dr. Clark? What is there such thing as group grief?
Group grief and collective grief. Right? So collective grief is what's felt by a group of people. So for example, this could be experienced by a community, by a city, or a country in response to like a natural disaster, death of a public figure, or like from terrorist attacks, or from something that many people or someone that many people or a group of people have in common, right? So there may be, it may be an individual and there's a group of people, say five people, a friend of these five people, and they've all been impacted by this. And so that's called collective grief. And so what happens as each individual starts to find themselves being able to go through these stages and to allow themselves the space to grieve and start to come out of it, they're no longer a part of that grieving process. But if they keep themselves in there, then yes, there's a strong tendency to get sucked back in to that whole process. So once you feel yourself gaining some strength and once you feel yourself gaining some momentum where you can move on, you can still be a support to that group, but now you need to make it an individual process for yourself.
Okay, but if the person doesn't have that take charge attitude of the group, because let's say maybe they're the youngest person or it's just not their personality, so they can support the group, however, there would still be a fear of getting sucked into the negativity of the group. Any suggestions? I think you're already hitting on it, but I'm really trying for our caller in, and thank you very much. And those of you who still want to call in, do so. The lines are open at 319-527-6090.
Well, sometimes what can happen is that now this person that is trying to kind of disconnect themselves from this starts to have some extreme feelings of guilt right? They may even feel a little angry because they want to move along and they can't. That's a different type of grief. That's what we call a distorted grief. And these noticeable changes in someone's behavior can turn into hostility towards a particular person or group, and sometimes they turn this the grieving process onto themselves and start to have some self-destructive behaviors. And so it's going to be important for this individual, they already recognize that there's something going on that's not making them feel real well. So they've already noticed that there has been a shift in this collective group grieving process. And so now they have to seek out assistance, and maybe they can talk to one of the other group members and get a perspective so that they can share with them that, hey, I think I'm ready to move on to the next level and be open. Remember, part of this process is allowing yourself to feel any emotions that you want to feel and be able to talk about it. So they've got to dig within and be able to have that conversation with the rest of the group and support from a different angle. And it may not happen overnight. It might mean that they back off from the group a little bit until they can find that voice to let the group know how they're feeling about this additional pressure that's being added.
You know, being in touch with one's feelings, my next text that came in, they're asking a point-blank question. Do you recommend that they take drugs to help them with their grief?
Absolutely not. Drugs and alcohol will only help mask the grief and will make the grief more complicated to deal with. Because now you're hiding behind something and you're putting a wall up. And we're not dealing with the issue. And we're not giving ourselves the grace and the space to have that experience. And oftentimes we find that once we come down off of the additional substances that we're using, that grief hits us in a more severe way that can make going through those stages a little more challenging. Now, what some people have done and they do during that depression stage, or if they're having challenges with sleeping and just being able to function, sometimes they reach out to their doctors. And if their doctors choose to put them on something, that's an independent decision between them and their doctors. But I don't advocate using substances or medication to get over anything because you're just masking the problem. You're not dealing with it.
Wow. That is probably one of the most heaviest ones that we have encountered. Like you, I don't believe in masking it. But I'm going to say this for the audience as we get ready for your monologue and wrap up and do one more commercial. But Dr. Clark, this pain hurts and it won't go away. I don't want to go to my doctor anymore because the doctor said no. But I notice when I take a drink, take a puff, take a pill, I don't have to feel this anymore. I can't take it.
At some point, again, we don't get to our healing if we don't allow ourselves to have the process. Yes, absolutely right. We may be able to take a drink and feel like that's the only way to get by. We may take some Tylenol PMs or Advil PMs or something and feel like that's what is going to help us, get to sleep. But at the end of the day, we still need to deal with the process because not dealing with it, now we're looking at the grief process becoming complicated grief, which is being traumatic or prolonged, or now we're looking at chronic grief. And so this is where your feelings of hopelessness and the sense of disbelief of the loss is real. You avoid any situations that remind you of this loss, i.e. by engaging in other substances, or the loss of meaning and the value in a belief system. And so many times people with chronic grief experience intrusive thoughts, right? And if this chronic grief is left untreated, it can develop into the severe clinical depression. That's where the suicidal ideology comes on, the self-harming thoughts come, and even the substance abuse begins to come in. So those things sound like they're good fixes for the moment, for the spur of the moment. And at some time or another, you know, people have done that, but that's not going to get rid of the underlying issue, and it's only going to compound it more and more and more. And then the results are going to be more damaging than they are good.
Absolutely. You hit it dead on the nose, because you may cause a different type of a grief that you'll take blame to if you don't seek some help. Other ways to deal with that type of pain, obviously, is get a friend. Now, this is going to sound a little rude, so you folks get over it. Maybe a pet, you know, if you can stand them. You know, dog is supposed to be man's best friend. Get a bird, get some fish, something that we call healthy distraction. Take up a sport, a hobby, or something like that. But you want to mind yourself of becoming obsessive to the point that you're trading one grief for another. It's time for us to go into our commercial and wrap this up, folks. Again, the show is being brought to you by Flashback Academy, where we work with former foster care youth and veterans and help them get off the street into a decent living environment. Yes, and there is mental health attached to that too. So find out more by writing us at flashbksllc@gmail.com. Dr. Clark, again, this has moved very, very fast, and it's just about time to wrap this up. But I do want to ask one other question as it relates to where can people go to start taking some of your classes or get some of the support that they need right away?
You can visit my site at www.rotm.la. You can call 818-646-6608. Or you can go to drclark.rotm.la.
Outstanding. Share your closing remarks as we wrap this up. This has been a great show. I'm hoping many of you have gotten something out of it, not just the one caller in. You feel free to tell your friends, and let's go from there. Dr. Clark, take it home.
Since we got into a little bit of denial tonight, I'm going to leave you with these words, again, by Alan Wolfe, PhD. Trying to protect myself by denying my pain will only lead to more pain. I need to be honest with myself about my feelings and my needs. So until the next time you meet, give yourself the space to grieve. Thank you.
We will all get out. Someday.